This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Brandon Contes.
All righty. Welcome to episode 14 of the Awful Announcing Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Contes, and this week we have longtime college football reporter, writer, podcaster, Andy Staples of On3 joining us to help make sense of everything that went on with the Pac-12 last week and college football in general. Andy, thanks so much for coming on the Awful Announcing Podcast today. Obviously, there's still more things to be worked out for the remaining teams, but has the dust started to settle? Like, is there any sense of even closure after what happened in college football last week?
Well, as we record this, the Cal Board of Regents is about to go into a meeting to talk about something. I mean, they've got to do something. The Cal, Stanford, Oregon State, Washington State have to figure something out, and they have to figure it out very soon. So we'll see what happens. I mean, the ACC has met about this stuff. The ACC has met about helping the Pac-12 out since USC and UCLA left. I don't see that happening just logistically. I can't imagine that the ACC would pick up Cal and Stanford, even though most university presidents, you ask them, hey, you want to rub shoulders with Cal and Stanford? They're like, yeah. But most TV networks would say, nah, you can pass on that because they're not going to bring the amount of value that will keep the rest of your members from taking a haircut. So, and especially in the ACC where they have their own issues in terms of revenue sharing and distribution, it's hard to imagine that. So something needs to happen there. I would like the most logical thing is the Mountain West takes those four and then, but maybe they use the Pac-12 name and branding, but the Mountain West runs it. That would be the most logical conclusion. But I think if you look at how everything that's happened over the past 2 years, logic is sort of out the window.
Yeah. So I'm admittedly not a huge college football fan, certainly not a college football expert, just to like put that out there. So if any of my questions wind up being inane, it comes from
I wouldn't worry about that.
Ignorance.
Well, but that's the thing, like trying to explain this to people who live normal lives and aren't knee deep in this stuff all the time. And you, that's where you realize like why they lose Supreme Court cases 9-0 and sort of, you know, it's so weird. It's such a weird world and yeah. Everybody who's in it understands the language and all the quirks of it. But if you try to explain it to a normal person, like what the hell are you talking about?
So for me, last week and Friday, it was like you hear Oregon and Washington are talking to the Big Ten, and then hours later, the deal is done, which that struck me as odd. First of all, it strikes me as odd that Oregon and Washington are in the Big Ten. And then second, how did this happen so quickly? Did it happen that quickly? Are these deals something that can materialize in hours, or have they been discussed for weeks and months and we just didn't really hear about it?
Oh, it didn't happen quickly. I mean, Oregon and Washington reached out to the Big Ten as soon as they took USC and UCLA. And that was over a year ago. And they were trying to make their pitch for membership. And you heard the reporting that the Big Ten had already vetted Oregon and Washington. They had. When they looked at USC and UCLA, they also looked at potentially adding Oregon and Washington. After adding USC and UCLA, Oregon and Washington wanted to go to the Big Ten because they realized that the Pac-12 is pretty unstable. So they were, you know, they had their people talking to the Big Ten people saying, hey, here's what we can offer. Here's what we do. Here's how we can help you. And so that was all there. But the Big Ten was in a position of, and you know, it's hard to say how true any of this is, but the Big Ten presidents didn't want to be the people who dealt the death blow to the Pac-12, which, let's be honest, they did that when they took USC and UCLA. So it was a little silly that they were even thinking that way. But the thought, if Arizona State, and Utah were already going to go to the Big 12, which while that happened after, you know, hours after Oregon and Washington happened, it all kind of happened all at once. And so when it became clear the Pac-12 was going to disintegrate, they were okay with taking Oregon and Washington. But I think if you look, and this is where, you know, what Awful Announcing covers fits in here. You look at it, the initial report from Dan Wetzel last week was that they were looking at Oregon, Washington, Cal, and Stanford. And like I said, what university president wouldn't want to be associated with Cal and Stanford? You notice Cal and Stanford dropped out of that pretty quick. And then it was just Oregon and Washington. And they only ended up taking Oregon and Washington. Why? Because Fox has outsized influence on what the Big Ten does. And Fox probably said, hey, we're fine with you taking Oregon and Washington at pennies on the dollar because we can get value out of that. I'm not so sure we get value out of Cal and Stanford.
Yeah, I keep seeing people and fans kind of complain about the schools being greedy and chasing money, which sure, that's part of the case. But isn't it also that the networks are spending a lot of money and Fox spends over $1 billion a year on the Big Ten? So obviously they're going to want more big schools to create more big games. And that's a big part of it too.
Well, and also remember Fox and the Big Ten are partners on the Big Ten network. So that's a big revenue driver for Fox as well. So that Fox has more influence. Like the Big Ten has deals with CBS and NBC, but Fox is the one that's calling the shots on all of those.
2 years ago, who did you think was in better shape for the future, the Pac-12 or the Big 12?
Oh, 2 years ago when Texas and Oklahoma left the Big 12, I assumed the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And it was interesting hearing the Arizona president, Robert Robbins, talk about it on Monday, because he said as soon as that happened, all the Big 12 presidents reached out to him and to the other Pac-12 presidents and said, hey, please take us. And Robbins was for that. He went to the Pac-12 presidents and said, let's make a Pac-20. Let's just take them. And I'm assuming there was probably discussion about, well, maybe don't take all eight, maybe take four of them, the four best you think. But that never came to fruition. And a lot of it with the Pac-12 was always kind of academic snobbery of, we don't want to be associated with schools that we feel are below us and beneath us. And that wasn't how everybody else was thinking. So the Big 12... previous commissioner Bob Bowlesby moved very quickly to get four new members after they lost Texas and Oklahoma. So they got Cincinnati, BYU, UCF, and Houston, which are pretty good pickups from a, you know, long view future football success standpoint. And that shored them up. That offered some temporary stability for them. And then they became the aggressor when Brett Yormark was hired as the commissioner. He basically, we're open for business. And they were hammering away on Arizona and Colorado and Arizona State and Utah, saying, you belong in this league. Come to us. We'll be stable. We're not losing anybody again. And if you look at the Big 12 as it will be constituted, and we're not sure they're done yet either. So I have a hard time saying they're stopping at 16. But if you look at the 16 they're going to have, nobody is super high above anybody else, and nobody is super below anybody else in terms of value media wise or in terms of prestige. So they're all fairly equal. That feels like a league that will run fairly smoothly, and also one where you don't have to worry about somebody coming in and cherry picking you.
So is there one person most responsible for the Pac-12 being dismantled now? Like, is it Larry Scott? Is it George Kliavkov? Is it a school president or athletic director? Or you can't really.
I'll give you a trio. I'll give you a trio that I think probably deserves the most blame, because George Kliavkov, a lot of what he was dealing with was circumstances that he inherited that he couldn't change, couldn't do anything about. So I put him down on the list, though his performance the last few months, especially at Media Day, was pitiful. I mean, basically he sounded like the buddy you have in high school is like, I got a girlfriend, but she's in Canada. She can't come to prom. Like, talking about the media rights deal. So, but the trio I would put the most blame on is Larry Scott, who was the previous commissioner, Michael Crow, the president of Arizona State, and Ed Ray, who's the former president of Oregon State. And basically those two presidents ran the league. They were the true believers in Larry Scott. They kept him employed a lot longer than he should have been. And you heard Michael Crow over the weekend. Arizona State's going to the Big 12, but they had to be dragged kicking and screaming to the Big 12. it like you can tell Michael Crow is going there with his nose held.
Yeah.
And that's silly. Like, you're not any more special than any of those programs or any of those universities. Like, there's nothing about Arizona State that's more special than that, other than, I mean, if you had a burger, the Chuck Box, maybe that's up there. But, and they do have a stadium in the side of a mountain, which is pretty cool. But it's not that different. And he acted like they were so high. Like, you're not Stanford. You don't get to act like that. So he was like that. And then Ed Ray, like, why you're letting Oregon State run your conference instead of USC or Oregon or Washington doesn't make any sense.
Is Michael Crow aware that streaming and Apple TV is not new technology?
No, he is not. He was talking, he said, I believe his exact words were 23rd century Star Trek stuff. And my first response to that is, dude, don't you know that all Star Trek shows are on Paramount Plus? Like, clearly you don't know your apps at all. And yeah, I mean, like, he's obviously never watched an NFL game on Amazon Prime, because he's talking about, well, the athletes at the touch of a button. Like, you're describing something we all, like, 12 right. million of us saw that each week if we tuned into the alternate feed on the Amazon broadcast of an NFL game.
So is there somebody that could have had a better chance at keeping the Pac-12 intact? I know, like, they were talking to Burke Magnus a couple of years ago. Like, is he somebody, would this all happen?
Burke absolutely
anyway?
Would have been completely pragmatic about it. I've known Burke for years, and you know, he understands exactly how this works. He understands who's valuable and who's not. And he would have understood, because he's seen it happen over the years in various forms. Like, a good example is the turn of this century. The Big East and the ACC started this century on essentially equal footing. And John Swofford at the ACC realized it was eventually going to be a kill or be killed situation. So he killed the Big East. And the Big East didn't see it coming. And everybody in college sports should have watched that and said, oh, being aggressive in these situations, if you feel that you're vulnerable, and the ACC could have been vulnerable at that point in time. If you feel you're vulnerable, you need to be aggressive. And you've seen that with Mike Oresko at the American, has tried to be aggressive. It's not always worked, but he's tried. And you saw it with Brett Yormark in the Big 12. The Pac-12 wasn't aggressive at all. If they take all or some of those Big 12 leftover teams after Texas and Oklahoma leave, and I don't know they'd take them all. Maybe they would have only taken four. They would still exist right now.
Yeah. So part of the reason why I'm not a big college football fan is because I grew up in New York on Long Island, and I went to St. John's. So it's just not something that I was really exposed to much when I was younger. But like, I love football. I love the NFL. I'm a lifelong Jets fan. So that proves I don't necessarily need a certain level of quality to enjoy football and to root for a team in the sport. But for me, college football always felt a little more regional. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong or naive in thinking that this realignment helps to change that and could potentially recruit more casual fans like me to the sport in the long run?
That's been the point for a while, is they want to get more casual fans. They want to have those big blockbuster matchups week after week after week. And I was texting an athletic director about this the other day, and this AD said, well, I worry about the regular season. I said, you guys understand you're helping the regular season here. This was an AD at a school that is in the quote unquote power two. The SEC adding Texas and Oklahoma, the Big Ten adding USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington, you're making better games than you had before. You know, I think the people in charge of the sport didn't realize how much damage they did the regular season with the stupid body bag games where they're paying, you know, a MAC school $1.5 million to come in and get beat, or with basically the lack of parity within the conferences, where the Big Ten has their elite teams and then they got some chum at the bottom, and the SEC sometimes has chum at the bottom too. And the games that have stakes and the games where it feels like both teams have a chance to win, those are the games that people want to watch. So there are going to be more of those with more brands that people like. And so, yes, the casual fan will probably be rewarded. The diehard fan will still watch. And that's the part that the diehard fan that complains on Twitter about, this is terrible, I'm not going to watch it. Yes, you are. You love this stuff. I don't care. You are never going to find something else to do on a fall Saturday afternoon. Like, those people are already hooked. So it's a case of trying to bring more people into the tent. And everybody keeps comparing it to NASCAR. But the thing is, NASCAR is boring, for one. But two, it's not football. Like, we as a country love football and are very passionate about football and will watch football because it's on. And if we had the best of this age group, because remember, 3 years, they can't go to the NFL. So you have players who are going to be first-round NFL draft picks playing in all these games. If we have that, people are going to watch it. And if you have more of Alabama, Texas, or LSU, Oklahoma, people are going to watch that more.
With 18 teams in the Big Ten, like, is there eventually going to be a point where the bigger schools stop paying those lesser out-of-conference schools to come in and get beat early on in their schedule because now there is so many teams in their conference that, I mean, they could essentially build a schedule where they are playing lesser teams just within their own conference?
Now, not if you ask their coaches. They would like to keep doing that, but I think we'll see that as the SEC, and if the SEC got bigger again, I think you'd probably see that too. The SEC's at 8 conference games now. They're going to go to 9. But yeah, if you get much bigger in the Big Ten, you might have to go to 10 conference games. And, you know, I don't know that a lot of people are going to complain about that, other than, because I don't even know if the fans of the MAC schools or the Sun Belt schools that get brought in enjoy those games all that much. So,
right.
I think there's a chance that that happens, and nobody's going to really shed a tear in terms of audience, because yeah, we want to watch better games on the whole. So I'd be all right with that. We'll see what they do. I would like to see good out of conference games, but a lot of it is, you know, going to the 12-team playoff in 2024, people are gonna have to rewire their brains, because a lot of people think you have to be undefeated or one loss to have been a great college football team. Well, part of that is maybe you just got lucky with your schedule. If you make it where everybody's playing more good games, the idea of getting lucky, the schedule goes away. But also you have to consider the idea that a team that lost 2 or 3 games might still be one of the best teams in the country, because maybe that got better as the season went on. Maybe they're hot at the right time. And I know that that bothers the purists a little bit, but that's how every other sport works. And we don't have a problem with it. Like, we don't have a problem with the Denver Nuggets winning the NBA title. Like, they played their way through and won it. Ditto for whoever wins the Super Bowl. So, and I realize that there's a bunch of college football fans, we don't want to be like the NFL. Yeah, you do. It's the most popular sport in the country for a reason. And it's fine to be different. Like, quirky differences are great. Like, I don't want Colorado to ever stop running a live bison down the field. That's great. That's a great quirky difference. Having a stupid postseason that isn't as fun as any other postseason in any sport, because everybody else does it the right way, that's not a cool quirk. That's just dumb.
So how does the realignment alter the college football playoff selection process now?
Good question. Now, so we're still not done with the first 12-year college football playoff contract. They've changed the format in the middle of it. And so the last 2 years of the contract, 24 and 25 seasons, will be a 12-team instead of a 4-team. They will have the 6 highest-ranked conference champs and 6 at-large bids. I suspect when they go, they can go back and rip that all up before the contract that starts the 26th season. I suspect, based on how this realignment shakes out, they'll reduce the number of automatic bids. They'll say the 5 highest-ranked conference champs.
And what is, in your mind, what's the right number of teams for the college football playoff? Is it 12? Is it more?
I like 12. I don't know that I want it to be any bigger than that. I think it'll probably eventually get bigger than that. The other divisions play a 2014 playoff, but 12 is still more selective than any other postseason tournament that we watch as American sports fans. It's way more selective than the NFL playoffs, yeah, the NBA playoffs, than the NCAA tournament. So I am fine with that because it's still fairly exclusive, but you're going to get blockbuster matchups for three straight weeks.
For basketball, it almost seems like it would make sense to split the Big Ten up into two divisions, maybe even recruit two more schools, and then you have 10 in each division. Is that something that football would be opposed to? Does splitting the conference hurt their chances at more playoff bids?
Well, divisions hurt your chances at more playoff bids in the system that exists now. And that's why I'm curious to see what they do, because when it was a 16-team Big Ten and a 16-team SEC and a 14-team ACC, it made sense to ditch divisions, and you give yourself a better chance because, you know, you don't have the possibility of a weak division champ beating your better division champ and either knocking them out of the playoff or knocking them out of a bye, knocking them out of a home game, something like that. You don't want that. And also, you probably can get the most teams in if you play without divisions. But like when you go to 18, logistically, I don't know if you can do it without divisions or pods. You could do, you know, you could do 3 16 pods if you wanted to at 18. So that's a part. That's something I would like to talk to the folks in charge, who I don't think have thought this through at all quite yet, about what they're thinking on that front, because it made perfect sense with 16. You can do a nice logical 9-game conference schedule. You can do permanent opponents and then roll all the other. You do 3 permanent opponents. All the other opponents roll through twice every 4 years. Like, that makes mathematical sense. I don't know how you make mathematical sense with 18 or 20. And to me, honestly, once you get above 16, it feels like two different conferences. Because for years, the conference has had 9 or 10 members. And so that would feel like two conferences to me if you did 10 and 10 or 9 and 9.
Was a potential media rights deal with Apple, was that close to saving the Pac-12 in recent months at all, or was this kind of always the inevitable route that we were headed?
I don't think it was as close as the presidents and ADs were trying to make it sound, because you can tell that when George Kliavkoff gave them that deal basically at gunpoint, because Colorado had left because he wouldn't say, here's the term sheet. And then Arizona said, you have to give us the terms as they stand right now, or we're leaving. And so he comes out, and I'm sure it landed like a fart in a stiff wind, because you're basically less money than the Big 12. You've got to sell a bunch of subscriptions, more subscriptions, I think, than Sunday Ticket had sold, essentially, to hit some of the benchmarks that they were trying to look at. And the Arizona president on Monday compared it to selling candy bars for Little League. Like, they were not impressed with that deal. And look, Apple, they're running a business. Yes, they could have bumped this up by a few $100 million, and that's a rounding error for them, but they're not going to overspend when they don't need to. So I don't think it would have saved it. I think if there had been a linear component to it, like with Fox or ESPN, and a streaming component to it, that might have saved it. Even if it had been less money, I think there's a chance that folks would have listened. But when it's all streaming, because remember, there's an availability gap at that point. You know, you have to recruit players, and it's really hard when you're recruiting against a Big 12 school. Let's not even talk about the Big 10. Like, if you have to recruit against the Big 10 with that Apple deal, the Big 10 coach is going to go, well, you know, your family can watch you on NBC and CBS and Fox. And then what do you say to that? No, you got to pay $100 a year to get this Apple TV Plus subscription. Right. Unless you're a big Hijack fan, then you get it for $20 off.
So where does Apple go now? Because they still want college football games. Can they eventually get a deal for a slate of Big Ten games? And would Big Ten fans say, like Michigan fans, would Michigan fans pay for Apple TV to watch Michigan Rutgers during the season?
Michigan fans might not. Alabama fans would. You know, LSU fans would. Ohio State fans would.
Yeah.
But that's the trick there. These the premium games are still so valuable for broadcast, especially because broadcast is experiencing resurgence as the bundle dies, that I don't know you're going to be able to get the those conferences away from linear, because linear is going to want them. But you know, I think if we go down the rabbit hole 10 more years, what's this looking like? Like, can ESPN even afford the SEC 10 years from now? You know, that contract ends in 2034. Is ESPN realistically going to be able to pay the rights fees for Monday Night Football, for the NBA, for Major League Baseball, and for the SEC? And for the, you know, if they still have the ACC at that point. I don't know the answer to that. You know, we've heard they're talking about an equity stake getting broken off. You know, they're what, at 70 million homes where they were at 100 million 10 years ago. Probably going to be at 50 million when they start selling it over the top. And then, you know, I think we need to see how the consumer reacts to all this. So I'm thinking of myself as a consumer. I have YouTube TV. I would drop it if I could just buy ESPN over the top. I wouldn't need it. So even if ESPN sells to me at $35 a month, I'm fine with that because I'm dropping $80 a month worth of YouTube TV.
Right.
And then I'll have Paramount Plus for CBS. I'll have Peacock for NBC. The Fox app streams Fox. I can buy an antenna for $100 and get all those channels.
So the conference is still, at least right now, they prioritize big games being on network television. And like there's not, at least in the foreseeable future, an amount that Apple or Amazon could pay that would be enough to convince the...
Oh, no, there's an amount.
Okay.
But they're not willing to pay it. I mean, yeah. You looked at that Apple deal. Apple was offering less than a combination of ESPN and Fox were giving the Big 12.
Right. But I would imagine now Apple, if they're not going after the Pac-12 and say they still want college football, like now they're going to have to increase that. And I would imagine they'd be interested in increasing it if it means getting some Big 10.
Yeah, the problem is there's nothing available right now. I mean, the Big Ten might sell another package, but if I'm the Big Ten, the package I'm selling is a late night package. I actually may go to ESPN and say, "Hey, would you like to have some games 10:30 Eastern time Friday and Saturday night? Because we got some games."
Right.
And I think, you know, that's because, and that way you fund your edition of Oregon and Washington. That's how you fund that, by selling, because, you know, add two teams, you're basically adding 12 games a year to your inventory. And so I think that's potentially a package they could sell. But with Apple or Amazon, they're going to have to wait, because the Big Ten's not available until 2030. The SEC's not available until 2034. So those are the two that matter. ACC, we'll see what happens with them. You know, they're signed up with ESPN through 2036, but there's no guarantee that that's going to last. So, you know, perhaps if a bunch of schools broke off the ACC or dissolved the, you know, voted to dissolve the ACC and wanted to form their own conference, they could sell a deal to a streamer. But linear is going to matter because you got to recruit. Like, paywall is tough when you have to recruit.
What about the value of ESPN? There was always the lure of having your games on ESPN to kind of get more exposure with the yep. studio shows talking about the game and the school more. Does that added exposure from ESPN, does being on game day and Sports Center and studio shows, does that still hold value, or do schools not really care if Stephen A. Smith is going to talk about them on first?
No, they still care, but not nearly as much. You know, it's not what it used to be, because used to be, when you were on SportsCenter, everyone who was a sports fan watched you and saw you and was aware of you. And then, you know, College Game Day was just a behemoth. It was a monster, and you did anything to get your school on a college. And if they came to your school, that's even better because it's an infomercial for your school. I'm not sure how much longer that matters. You know, if you look at ESPN now, the greatest value for ESPN is the games themselves. Most of the other programming doesn't matter to people. You know, it's the game is the thing that everybody wants. So, and also if ESPN starts selling over the top and it's not linear and they don't have to fill five channels worth of bandwidth with content, I don't even know how much other shows there are. Like College Football Live used to run basically every day. It used to be on actual ESPN. Like that sort of shoulder programming has fallen by the wayside. And I think it's going to keep doing it as we live more in an on-demand world. I mean, that's essentially the bet that my company On3 is placing, that my show will be the one you want to come to talk about college football every day, because ESPN doesn't give you that.
Does college football want two super conferences? Is that the direction the sport wants it to go?
I don't think anybody actually wants that. I think they would like the different flavors to still exist. I'm afraid that that's where they're headed, but I don't know that it's that cut and dried. Like the idea of the Big Ten takes whatever good that's left and the SEC takes whatever good that's left, and suddenly the Big Ten's the NFC and the SEC's the AFC. I don't think it's that easy. You know, and those two, not the types that ever work together. I had a question on my show from a listener who I thought it was very insightful, asked, could at some point the biggest brands decide to go independent, like Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, that type of brand? And I think that actually is a better way of looking at it than, because I always get the question, at what point does the SEC kick out Vanderbilt and the Big Ten kick out Indiana and Northwestern? Well, I don't know that they're ever going to kick them out. I think there's a lot of problems involved there and probably a lot of potential lawsuits there. But if the schools that were subsidizing them said they didn't want to subsidize them anymore and suddenly went independent, they'd probably be independent for about 2 minutes. And then they'd form a super league together. Right. It's essentially how the English Premier League formed.
Can you see the Big Ten and SEC? Is it possible that they would ever partner to negotiate media packages? So like the way the NFL, compared to the AFC and NFC.
There'd be some antitrust concerns among the leaders there, and they've expressed that. And also just knowing those two conferences over the years, like imagining them working together feels very foreign to me. Perhaps that would happen over the next 10 years and they'd find a way to do that. But, you know, given their history, it's really tough to imagine those two working together for the same goal.
Does college football need the NCAA? Is there a way for them to break free of the NCAA?
Oh, yeah. It's easy. The schools are the NCAA. So all I have to say is football is not part of the NCAA anymore. Done. And you can set it up however you want. You could, you know, if the FBS, which is was the 10 conferences, now the 9 conferences, well, we'll see if it's 9 or 10 because the Pac-12 still exists in name. But they make up the college football playoff. If they wanted to have the CFP or some other entity govern that group as one, as its own unit, I think that would actually probably be better for everybody. It'd be better for football. It'd be better for the other sports, because football's problems are not volleyball's problems and vice versa. So you don't need to be trying to solve them all with the same people. And so I've said this for years, that football needs to break off and be governed in its own way. Now, what I think might happen is football and the two basketballs, men's and women's, may get broken off, because the NCAA basketball tournament, the men's tournament, you're talking about $1 billion a year media property, maybe $1.5 billion, depending on what the next contract would be. The women's basketball tournament is severely undervalued, but that's about to get fixed. You know, networks have figured this out. ESPN, if they want to keep it, they're going to have to pay up to keep it. So you could break all three of those off at once, and then you keep all the money among 100-something schools, or if you wanted to go even smaller, if you wanted to do just, say, the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Big 12, or you could do, you know, you want to add some, you want to add the Big East, you know, you want to add the Mountain West, you want to add those for basketball, you could do that. And you'd still have $1 billion a year property as a with a basketball tournament. And so there's a lot of money in that. And they could basically just take all the money if they did that, which honestly, they're the ones generating it. So they probably should.
And then if college football and or basketball were to break free of the NCAA, do the players, are they able to essentially just become employees then?
I think that's probably going to get decided in the courts here in the next few years. I didn't think it would happen very soon until probably about a year or so ago. I think it's probably headed that way just because the NIL thing is actually probably the best deal for the schools and maybe the best deal for the players, because the way it's set up right now is somebody else pays the players,
right,
and the schools don't have to, but the players also, there's no cap on it. You know, you can get whatever you want. I think if the players become employees, you're going to have a CBA, and it'll be a pretty weak union compared to the other sports leagues. So they would probably accept a lot less money than you'd think, or a lot lower percentage of the revenues than you'd think. And all of a sudden their income's capped where it wasn't before. And so, but it would allow for the schools and the whatever the governing organization is to actually have rules and enforce them. They could have rules about player movement. You have rules about salary cap, all that stuff. If you wanted to, you could make rules to try to enhance parity. And then NIL would still be allowed. So it would essentially be the same thing as, like, you know, the Lakers don't pay LeBron what LeBron's worth as a basketball player, sure, but Nike makes him whole. And you could do the same thing. And instead of NIL being used to pay the players for their value as players, which is what is happening now, even though they say it's not supposed to, let's be real, then the schools could pay the players for their value as players. And then NIL would become what it actually was, you know, brought up as, their value as marketers, their value as personalities, that sort of thing. I think that's the most logical way to do it. I know the schools don't want to do it, and they'll try to scare you and say, but we'll have to cut all these other sports. No, you don't. You had all these other sports when you made no money. You did it because you thought it was valuable. So if you cut other sports, it's because you don't care about them. And I will tell you, I will continue to tell people that, like, you, Mr. AD, who cut this sport, cut it because you don't care. Like, if you care, you'll go raise enough money to endow it, or raise, right, enough money to keep it going. Like, you know, Stanford has all these great non-revenue sports, Olympic sports, where they're very successful every year. And I said, what are you going to do if Stanford's not in the Pac-12? How are you going to keep those sports going? Break off a chunk of your endowment, which is massive, and endow them. Your problem solved.
Is there a correlation between the NIL and realignment?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that was coming anyway, and NIL was coming anyway. The realignment's more about the greed of the schools, and NIL is something that the greed of the schools tried to stop for a long, long time, and it just, common sense prevailed eventually.
As it becomes more obvious every single year that college football is a business, do they need a commissioner, and would they benefit from having a commissioner?
Well, if they split off and were just governed football only, they could have a commissioner. But it would require the SEC and the Big Ten, again, to work together and trust somebody to run the thing. And that's the tricky part, is you have all these fiefdoms, and everybody in charge of their fiefdom wants to be in charge. So it would take a rewiring of brains to make that work.
I don't want to talk much about the future of the Pac-12, because everything has been so fluid. And as we said, we're recording this Tuesday morning. Conversations are happening. This podcast is not going to get released until Friday, so everything could change. But what do you think the ideal situation for the remaining Pac-12 teams is?
There isn't an ideal situation, because unfortunately they've been acting as if these millions of dollars will continue coming in and will go up, and have taken on large capital projects and a lot of debt. And there's no way now to cover that debt without the university just chipping in or having to raise more money to do it. So that sucks for them. They basically got sold a bill of goods and they're stuck now. From a logistical, competitive, interesting viewing standpoint, what would I like to see happen? I would like to see them get rolled into the Mountain West. And you can call that the Pac-16, if you want to call it that. The Pac-12 branding is still stronger. But I would like the current governance of the Mountain West, Gloria Navarez is their commissioner. I would like them to be in charge. And I think that would be the best thing for those schools going forward. And for competition's sake, especially Oregon State and Washington State, they would be really competitive in that league. They would be fun to watch. It would be good football. But unfortunately for them, they got to figure out how to deal with that debt that they've taken on while they were trying to compete with all the big guns.
I want to just bounce around college football a little bit before we finish up. My first question is, will Nick Saban ever win another national championship?
I think it's entirely possible. Yeah, I think he could win one. He might be able to win a couple. I don't. The thing about Nick Saban is he's not like one of those people you think, okay, well, he's going to retire. I don't know if he's ever going to retire.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels like he's getting younger sometimes. And, you know, he seems to like having a challenge, a problem to solve. And Georgia is currently the problem to solve for him. Their roster's still really good at Alabama. They've still been recruiting at a very high level. That they don't know who their quarterback is right now, but I wouldn't even be surprised if Alabama won a national title this year.
Over under 4 seasons for Deion Sanders at Colorado.
Ooh, let's see. I'm going to go with 4 because the idea is that he'll either succeed, take another job that's better, or he'll flop and be fired. I think he's going to do fine. I think he's going to improve that roster. I just don't think he'll improve it as quickly as he did at Jackson State. You look at what they've got to deal with, especially this year, that his only year in the Pac-12 happens to be one of the deepest years the Pac-12's ever had. Like, they got to go to Oregon. They got to play USC. They're not going to be able to handle those teams. They just don't have the roster for it. But he did make the roster better already, and you give him a couple years to recruit, and I do think he'll make them competitive in the new Big 12. So the question is, can he do that quickly enough that he does a great job and then some other school decides, hey, we're going to throw a bunch of money at you to come here. If he makes Colorado competitive, that's going to happen. Because that was a hard job. That's viewed as one of the tougher jobs in college football. So if he can pull it off, he's going to get hired by somebody else. So I'd say, you know, he builds it up. And in year 3 and year 4, they're pretty competitive. And people recognize that and recognize the job he did. And if they're in an SEC program or in a Big Ten program, and they're like, hey, we would like you to improve our roster and make us competitive, they're going to call him.
Does Urban Meyer ever become a head coach again?
No, I don't think so.
No,
I think he's not really built for this era of college football. You know, his whole thing of I'll send you home on the first bus out of town, like, that doesn't work with the quality of player that he tends to recruit, because that kid's going to go, you know, I had 99 other offers, coach. I will be happy to go to one of them. And then you don't have me. You go get somebody else, but yeah, I'm going to be pretty good. So it's more like what he dealt with the Jags than what he dealt with when he was coach at Utah and Florida and Ohio State the first time around.
Will we see Arch Manning start a game for Texas this season?
If Quinn Ewers gets hurt, it's certainly a possibility. So I think they're pretty much all in on Quinn Ewers this year as a starter, but you know, if he were to not perform or if he were to get injured, I think we might see Arch. And You know, look, Texas has really high expectations this year. This is as talented a team as they've had. And everybody's like, oh, Texas always has a high-ranked recruiting class. I don't always look at it by just your recruiting ranking. I look at it by what was your recruiting ranking, but also when I talk to NFL people, how many guys do they feel like you have on your roster who are going to play in their league? And this is the first year in a while that if you talk to NFL people about Texas players, they're very excited about a lot of them.
Has how's the hype level for Manning? Like, do you think it's accurate? Is it fair? Is his ceiling as high as some fans hope it is?
I have no idea. Quarterback recruiting is a crapshoot. You have no idea who's going to be good and who's not. That you a guy can look amazing in high school and throw the most beautiful ball you've ever seen, and then they get in a game and they can't figure it out, or they can look, you know, like Mac Jones is a great example of this. Mac Jones didn't look like anything special coming out of high school.
Right.
But if you got to know him and you watched him work, you're like, okay, this guy could be pretty good. And then he finally does get his opportunity and he plays like a first rounder. So it is the ultimate crapshoot. Well, drafting quarterbacks in the NFL is probably the ultimate crapshoot, but this is a step below it.
Do you think Omaha Productions will be following him around collecting content? Or is that something like the Mannings would try to avoid? The extra cameras and stuff.
I don't know that they would try to create content off of him unless he was really down for it. If it's something he wanted to do and said, "Hey, Uncle Eli, Uncle Peyton, let's do this."
Yeah.
But I don't think so. Now, would I be shocked if Omaha Productions is talking to other college QBs or other college programs about some insider access? I wouldn't be shocked at all. The access they got for that Netflix quarterback show, nobody but Peyton and Eli Manning could have pulled that off to right. get Patrick Mahomes to say, come to my house, mic me up every practice and every game. Like that, you're not getting that yes unless you're Peyton and Eli Manning. And I think there's some college coaches and college players that if they come in and ask, they're going to be like, absolutely, let's go.
Yeah, that was going to be the next thing, is that you think that there's big coaches that would be okay with that?
It depends on the coach. Like the certain coaches are super paranoid, don't want anything like that in their program. But you know, if you go down a level to the ones that are kind of aspirational, that feel like that if they take one more step that they can reach national title caliber. Like I'd love to see Wisconsin, because Wisconsin clearly feels like with a little bit better recruiting, a little bit different playing style, that they can get in the mix to compete for national titles. That's the type of place that I think would open the doors and let you see. And Luke Fickell doesn't strike me as a person who's got a lot to hide. He seems like a pretty open book. And I think he'd be an interesting character as these shows go. Cause I mean, that's when you talk to the people who produce these shows, they're looking at it from a character story arc, all that standpoint. And that would be, but I will tell you, and I've talked to a couple people about this in the television world, and I don't know that you're ever going to get anybody to bite on this because it's just not sexy enough from a brand standpoint. The best show, the show that would blow up on Netflix like Last Chance You did, if you could make a deal with the Sun Belt to follow a team or maybe three teams, the three best teams, it would be unbelievable. You would get great stories, great access, great everything. People would fall in love with those players. But I just don't know it, because you say, oh, you know, the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. Who's that? The Troy Trojans, Appalachian State Mountaineers, Coastal Carolina Chanticleers. What's a Chanticleer? It's a chicken, by the way. But I'm telling you, if you're trying to make a show for a streaming service, like Netflix and Amazon Prime, you want to make a 6-episode documentary series, 8-episode documentary series, go to the Sun Belt. I promise it'd be good.
you were a walk-on at the University of Florida. Do you want to take a minute to gloat about your college football career?
No, I was a human tackling dummy. I was terrible. There's no gloating involved. I was lucky to be there and happy to be along for the ride, but it was very educational.
Yeah. How was playing for Steve Spurrier?
Hey, it's funny because I was not a Florida fan growing up. I grew up a South Carolina fan. which had, because it's, you know, with Steve Spurrier has its own, you know, backstory too. Yeah. But I was like in high school, if you said, well, who's your favorite between Bobby Bowden at Florida State or Steve Spurrier at Florida? I'm like, Bobby Bowden, definitely. Because, you know, it was a very white hat, black hat kind of thing. Like Bobby Bowden was the good guys and Steve Spurrier was the bad guys. And, you know, I went to Florida because I had an academic scholarship and they have a good journalism school. And so, and I was an in-state kid. And so I walk on, not thinking they'd even take me, and they do. And I will tell you, the more you're around Steve Spurrier, the more you love him. As long as you're not a quarterback or a receiver, because he can be pretty tough on those guys. But everybody else on the team, like, he's the good cop to your position coach's bad cop. And he's so much fun. There's no filter with him. And there's still no filter with him. I saw him a couple weeks ago. He will say absolutely everything that's on his mind. But you appreciate that because I feel like we get bullshit a lot in this world. And yeah. Steve Spurrier is never going to bullshit you. So that was fun. And it's interesting because, you know, I got to meet Bobby Bowden and interview him quite a bit over the years. And so if I had to go back to high school, Andy, and explain who you're choosing between Bobby Bowden and Steve Spurrier, the answer is both, because they were both awesome. But it's not a white hat, black hat thing. And then, as someone who grew up a South Carolina fan, seeing Steve Spurrier go and become the greatest coach in South Carolina history, winning 11 games 3 years in a row, something that nobody ever thought would happen, beating Clemson 5 times in a row. Like, I always tell him, you did as good as you were at Florida, you were actually better at South Carolina.
How is the move to On3 been for you, leaving The Athletic, going joining On3?
It's been great. It's much more show-based than story-based. I'm still writing a little bit, but they want to make sure I concentrate on the show at first and get it going. And we do a show every, basically Sunday through Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern time, that premieres on the YouTube channel. A lot of times it's going to be live with me taking questions and comments from the viewers. And then we put it out as a podcast, because I had a podcast with The Athletic, and that was the idea, is turn that into almost TV show doesn't, that description doesn't work anymore. But, you know, my kids watch everything on YouTube. I'm not quite there yet, but we're looking for that audience of the people who are watching all their stuff on YouTube, and
right,
the people who miss college football live every day and want a college football show to watch. And so I really enjoyed that part of it. And because it's not something I've done before. I've done radio shows, I've done podcasts, but thinking about things from a visual element and trying to put all that together, I've really enjoyed doing this. And I can't wait till the season starts, because we've had a lot of stuff to talk about, obviously, with realignment. But what really gets the blood going for college football fans are the actual games. So when that happens, I think it's going to really take off. And I can't wait to just talk to everybody as the season goes on and react to those games, because that's the most fun I have too.
Do you have a preference doing a show versus writing?
No, I wrote for so long. You know, I assume that would be the only thing I ever did when I was in college. And I was primarily a writer for almost 25 years. So this is fun. This is a nice change of pace for me. And it's a different schedule. It's a different challenge. A lot of times in the last few years, a story would come along and I'd think, oh God, I've written this thing 10 times already. The names had changed, but you realize it's the same story you wrote. You know, I wrote this in 2004 and I wrote a version of this in 2009. And this is all different and new. And that's what makes it so much fun. And then the good thing is I hadn't forgotten how to write. So when a good story comes along, I can write that too.
Andy, you were great. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That is Andy Staples. I'm Brandon Contis. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to this podcast. Please also subscribe to Awful Announcing's YouTube page, regardless of how you consume Awful Announcing and the Awful Announcing Podcast. Thanks for listening and be good.
Thanks for listening to the Awful Announcing Podcast. For the latest news spanning the sports media landscape and more, check out awfulannouncing.com and follow us at awfulannouncing.com.